Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got yet another fine return guest. That's right, all the way back from episode 2, we have got Jason Morissette. Jason's a filmmaker, a friend. And we really get into what it's like for a person with a pretty severe OCD during this pandemic. Do we talk about other things? We absolutely do. But it really does take up quite a lot of the discussion. And it's kind of the most I've actually talked to anybody. I've been avoiding having conversations about the COVID-19 pandemic. I've been avoiding even saying its name, almost like Beetlejuice. I'm afraid it's going to show up if I invoke it. It is something that I've got a strange amount of fear toward, almost like sharks. You know, I'm not going to see a shark probably in my day-to-day life. What are the odds I'm going to see a shark? Even living next to the ocean now and being able to go out in it, what are the odds I'm going to come face-to-face with Jabberjaws? It's not very likely. And I'm taking precautions in this day and age to keep myself safe and keep myself healthy. So what are the odds that I'm actually going to get really sick from COVID-19? They're pretty low because I'm taking the precautions. I'm doing the things that a person is supposed to do. And yet, I have a lingering small fear, just kind of in the background, that I think is going to take a while to digest, process, and fully come to grips with. The idea that I don't have to stay in my house forever, and I can leave, and I can get out there, and I can become a part of the world again. I can go to the movies at some point. It's that that part of myself that has been sort of isolating my whole life, that's saying, see, we were right. We were right. But I don't agree with that. I've always been a person who, I shouldn't say always, I haven't always been a person who has tried to expand my boundaries and get out there. I was pretty shut in and set in my ways most of my life, I would say. But one of the things I wanted to change about myself was to be more open, to greet the world with open arms and an open mind, and genuinely mean that. And it's a little difficult to do when the mistrust of the world in general, the air that you breathe, the surfaces you touch, the people you come into contact with, having to have this idea that even the kind people who might mean you no harm at all could be carrying this virus and accidentally get you sick. It's really fascinating. It's a difficult thing to have a conversation about. And I'm really, really fascinated by the people who have decided that all of this is too difficult to have conversations about. It's too difficult to plan and change and adapt, and so we have to pretend that it's all fine and turn everything back on and pretend this never happened. But that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. This may be an unpleasant reality at the moment, but it's a reality nonetheless. And trying to make it less of a reality simply because you'd prefer that it was, guess what, cousin? Doesn't happen. You know, it does happen. I have a great conversation with my friend Jason. We go back and forth about all of these things that are bubbling up to the surface through all of this, especially if you're a hypochondriac and have OCD, and all of a sudden all of your impulses that you've been fighting this whole time spring forth and almost turn you into a superhero because you've been training for this. You've been training for this. I'm going to let him explain it. But you know what? I want to say this. Before we get into the conversation, I want to say that I appreciate all of you. I appreciate you listening. I hope that this is bringing you some kind of comfort in these crazy times. I hope that you're getting some laughs out of it. And even recognizing sometimes the humor can get a little dark, and that's okay. I don't mean any disrespect to anybody who's suffering right now. You've got my heart. You've got my ears. I am here for whatever you need. But just be smart out there. Try to be smart. I'm not saying trust everything you hear. But let's just say pay attention and just try to be safe. Be smart. I like all of you people. I don't want to see anything happen to you. All right. Is that enough of this? That's enough of this. Let's get into the conversation. That's why you're here. Let's talk to the wonderful Jason Morissette. Jason, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Chris, for having me back.
Well, I really wanted to get your take on something because the last time we talked about all of this, especially in regards to your particular, let's say, cocktail of fun issues, as everyone has their own, I thought that now especially would be a really good time to follow up with you and kind of see how things are going for you with regards to your obsessive compulsive disorder in a global pandemic.
It's quite interesting to, I don't know if, I don't think the word fortunate is the right word, but I feel surreal having been, you know, obsessive compulsive and a hypochondriac in the midst of a pandemic. I never really thought I would be in the situation to, you know, have my kind of worst fears come true.
Did you ever have a moment where you just wanted to shout, I was right?
Yes. Early on, I remember when people started washing their hands more frequently and, taking different precautions, I felt like, well, welcome to what I've been doing for my whole life. You're just catching up. I've got a whole lifetime of practicing for this.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too that you bring that up because I was a person that was pretty pretty obsessive with the hand washing for years and years, and I worked really hard to get myself over it.
Yeah.
And now here we are, and it's kind of like it's a strange thing. I have to be mindful. You know, it's almost like I know I have alcoholism in my family, so I got to be careful about my drinking. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Like I know hand washing can lead to bad hand washing.
Yes. Well, that's the exact kind of internal battle that I've been having. And down the road when we're on the other side of this, having to battle that even more potentially. Alcoholism is a, what if somebody's an alcoholic, but then for whatever reason, they're forced to have to drink alcohol to a limited extent for a short time. How would that, it's kind of that kind of situations for, I think, for people with OCD, where all these things I've trained myself to try to avoid doing, now I'm kind of forced to do, but I got to regulate myself while doing it.
Right.
It's kind of an exhausting thought process.
Do you think that you've tapped into any sort of reserves as far as being able to manage this better now than, say, you would have been able to even 5 years ago?
I think that I've at least have a good understanding of myself, so that I know what to watch for and what to look for, and to, I guess, to know what's potentially extreme. Since the details of the virus change on a daily basis, and the recommendations that are made also change, it's very hard to know when you are being overly cautious, just cautious enough, and maybe what you think you should do today is, well, in the end, be just right. Maybe it's going to be under, not cautious enough. It's a weird situation when you don't really know the exact, all the exact details of how this virus acts. You know, scientists don't really fully understand it yet. So,
yeah. You know, the thing that gets me on this, is the 14-day incubation period. That's really the crux of it for me, because you can exhibit no symptoms for 2 weeks. So then where do you start the clock? And for me, starting the clock every time I check my mail, every time I get something delivered, whether it's food or packages, which is almost everything these days. So what about going out? I mean, are you just sheltering in place there, or are you actually venturing out once in a while when needed?
So far I'm venturing, or I'm staying sheltering in place. I'm not going out. I'm incredibly fortunate that I'm in a situation where I can work from home.
Yeah.
And, live in a community where I can have things delivered to me. And I'm mostly an introvert, so kind of at-home isolation doesn't bother me to the extent that it would extreme extroverts. It's kind of my natural tendency to stay at home anyway. I'm not a total introvert. I still like social interaction, and I miss a lot of the activities I did before, but it's a lot easier for me to control that. So overall, I feel very fortunate in my situation, and I think my challenges come out of just the general challenges that everybody faces in this situation, just increased by my OCD and my hypochondriac natures. So, but with that, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm pretty curious about this too. Take me back a little bit further. Let's go back to before all of this happened. Let's say, anywhere between October and January. Where were you at as far as keeping a handle on monitoring these kinds of things for yourself? Were you seeing a therapist?
I have not seen a therapist for a number of years. It had been something I actually had started to think about doing again, just because after I last saw a therapist for a period of time, I got a good control of my OCD tendencies. And over time, they've kind of crept back into my life to an extent. Not yet to the more disability impact that I had before I saw one, but I could see it growing further potentially, and considering going in to see somebody to kind of nip it in the bud before I got too bad.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was not too bad. I think my most frequent ritual that I do is kind of touch walls or touch different objects in a certain way when I walk by them. And that'd be the way that it manifested itself the most. And I saw an increase in that, which now, oddly enough, is in our world where I can't touch anything. It kind of creates a bit of a paradox.
Yeah. How do you feel about something like that when you come across something that compels you to touch it?
Well, in my house, at least, I keep a pretty good control over it. I don't have people coming in, sure, touching things. So just me and my partner here, and both of us work from home. So for the most part, the home is pretty safe. It is whenever I have, you know, something from outside the house come in, I usually sterilize it so that way I don't have to worry too much about if I touch something and whatnot. It's more so when I go out, and the only time I really go out now is to go running.
Mm-hmm.
And before, I might run by a signpost or a guardrail and I might have to touch it. And I just control it pretty well that I'm not touching anything, because the reverse is touching it, then I'd have the anxiety of, you know, the fact that I touched something that couldn't be exposed to.
Yeah.
So that ends up kind of overriding the touching ritual.
Yes. Yeah, I find that one of the things that's kind of come back for me, and a thing that I'd forgotten about, was I'm susceptible to unwanted thoughts. And so I'll see something and I'll just latch on to it, and I can't get it out of my head no matter how much I might like to. I've gotten better about it. Like, for example, I think one of the last times I decided I was going to go out, even though I was kind of feeling a little fearful about going out and what that could mean and getting sick and things like that. I was at a Target, and we were in there, and it was just after they had decided they were no longer going to allow people to buy non-essential items. And so all of the carpeted areas of the store with clothes and furniture and stuff like that were all roped off. You can't buy any of this. And they had people outside constantly rubbing down the handrails on the escalators, like as it came by. And it was just bizarre. And I didn't want to touch anything. And at the same time, I had this real urge to just rub everything all over my face. and I couldn't shake it. And then I could see myself getting sick. It was a really strange thought process, because I was actually compelled, and I was trying to reason myself through why it would be a great idea and a bad idea simultaneously. It was the strangest set of circumstances that I couldn't wrap my head around, because that was a kind of a thought cluster that I haven't experienced in probably years. And yet here it was.
Yeah. And I can relate to that, because I've had similar urges in the past. I guess that's probably one reason to I'm very reluctant to venture out. Especially into stores. Fortunately, you know, I live in a place where I can have, you know, most of my groceries delivered and food delivered. And I sort of feel guilty for kind of using those services because it's putting somebody else at risk. It's their limited resources for other people that are at high risk, you know, age groups or pre-existing conditions that are competing for their time as well. So I feel guilty for every time I use one of those services, but at the same time, I can't imagine the level of anxiety I would have going into a store with my hypochondriac. I would be trying to hold my breath.
Right.
And anytime I walk by people.
I do. I hold my breath every time I walk past a human being. I don't go to the store anymore because I finally realized, even with a mask on, I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, that part of me has just woken up and I decided rather than fight with it, what? Now's maybe not a bad time to just shelter in place. And if we have to go to the store, we'll make it pretty rare, but we're going to use up everything that we've got. We'll keep our deliveries to a minimum. We're just not going to go out other than right now, like you said, I go out running. But even going out and running, it's a little strange. It's a little strange to see. For one, I just moved here. So pretty much all of California that I know is like a 3 mile radius. That's California to me, because and I know all of my neighbors' houses, but I am starting to see some problematic things in that 3 mile radius. Like,
same here.
People gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly not a family. It's clearly people who are disillusioned about what's going on.
Yep.
So let me ask you this, not to get too political on this, because I don't think the situation is political. I think people can make it political, but I don't think it is. What do you think as far as that idea of supporting people who have their who have a right to protest, but also feeling like supporting the right to protest could be putting people in danger? Those are two competing ideas that I'm holding in my head right now. And I'm having a tough time finding that balance I've been going through that myself. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've had similar kind of struggles with that. I tend to go back to, my nature, and every situation is unique. And so if you have a flat kind of thought process, this is what I believe in, and this is what I believe in through thick and thin, you may lend yourself into trouble. So if you believe in the right to protest, no matter what, the general right to protest is a very important right to have, and it should be made available for people to do. However, sometimes it may be the worst thing that you can do. there's no absolute rule as far as how society should act. And so sometimes you have to realize that just because in general terms, protesting can be a good thing, doesn't mean it works in all situations. For instance, let's say all oxygen in the air outside your home disappeared and you go out and you died if you tried to go outside because you couldn't breathe. That probably wouldn't be a good time to go outside, even though your right to protest outside, is generally a good thing. So sometimes greater world events happen that should limit what in normal times would be a right that we should be able to be free in acting out. So when I see people out there protesting, you know, if they did so, I think in they remain in their cars, if they kept lanes open for emergency vehicles, then I wouldn't see a problem with that. However, people get together and their emotions run high and it opens them up to do things that put them at risk and then puts anyone they come in contact with after the fact at risk. You know, it puts people, if they go to the grocery store, you know, other people that are not going out and protesting and staying in their homes as much as possible at risk. So then it becomes, I think, kind of a selfish act for people to do.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm landing on that as well. I think that there's a lot of failure to think things through.
And I'm
feeling quite a lot of stress and irritability. I know a lot of those things are at an all-time high for a lot of people, and we generally, as human beings, don't necessarily do well when we're isolated. Mm-hmm. Not completely. We're social creatures, whether we like it or not, even the introverted of us, because I'm with you. My tendency is to hole up and, you know, just work on a million things. And I'm perfectly mm-hmm. happy to watch movies, play video games, make music, just stay in my studio all day. Perfectly happy to do that. But every once in a while, you've got to have some kind of human interaction. Now, luckily, we're partnered up, so problem solved. But some people need a little more than that. And while I don't necessarily identify with it on a deep level, I do have empathy for it. And I recognize that when those emotions are running so hot and you don't have a box to put them in, not everybody has a handle on their mental health situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's part of what's going on here. But specifics to you as far as how you're managing things and getting by in all of this, what is your thought process for what you're going to do to be able to get yourself into a movie theater or a restaurant when all of this is supposedly said and done?
I have given just kind of preliminary thoughts on that. I don't feel at all even ready to determine that. I don't think I would be able to do it until there's at least a vaccine or antibody test prevalent and start to be able to get a good grasp on the reality of the situation. I don't do well in unknowns, and I feel like right now we're just in such an unknown environment that I need to have the unknowns figured out to a significant extent before I felt comfortable venturing out. Now, I think I could do some things sooner than others. For instance, I moved out to the Pacific Northwest in part because I wanted to go hiking.
Yeah.
And I love hiking and everything. Now, the trails are all closed right now because too many people are going out hiking. But down the road when they open back up, probably won't be the first to go out there because I'm sure they'll be crowded. But once the early adapters all jump in and, you know, get it out of their system, that'd be one of the first kind of outside social type of things that I would probably venture out and be okay doing.
Because it seems a little more safe in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Because you're outdoors.
Yes. Yes. So going into a movie theater or a restaurant, I don't think I'd be able to go to those things to enjoy them, and I don't think I would be able to enjoy them. So, and then I'd be worried after the fact of you know, did I get in contact with somebody? Did I get it? So I don't think I could, you know, it kind of defeats the purpose of going to them in the first place.
Yeah.
So it will take quite a bit of, I think, a better grasp on the full situation before I'd be okay going on doing that.
So what are you doing with your time these days? What's been your main area of focus to keep you sane?
Well, I would like to say I've been doing a lot of writing and creative work, but I haven't had, I've had time to do it, or I haven't had the energy to do it. Yeah. Probably a mix of both. A lot of it, fortunately, I have a steady stream of work that I keep 40 hours plus a week doing, so I don't really have a lot more. I don't have any more free time than I did before all this.
Right. Because for you, this part of it hasn't changed.
Yeah, I worked from home before, and if anything, I'm busier now than I was before the whole pandemic started. So I don't have any more free time than I did before. And what free time I do have, and the work that I do, it has a creative element to it, so it can be mentally exhausting, and it can be hard for me to jump in and start doing some creative writing or, you know, working on different things on my own. So I tend to, and then of course listening to the news and getting stressed out and having the anxiety from that, I tend to watch television, you know, get caught up on shows that I missed, or, you know, rewatch movie series that I love, kind of escapism.
But knowing that you could be, let's say, agitated knowing that your hypochondria or your OCD could be activated by paying attention to what's going on in the news, how have you been at rationing the information that you're taking in?
Honestly, probably not. I could do a lot better. that's for sure. It can be addicting. It can be in its own addiction.
Absolutely.
What's going on? I mean, the news is so fast and furious, and the way that people respond to it is rapidly changing. And, you know, it can be, you know, watching people go out and protest and exposing themselves and standing next to each other without masks on. And it can be infuriating. And like, why are we, you know, and watching our government, you know, again, not to get too political, but, you know, a failure of government to properly have a control on this and at times encourage this behavior can be, you know, rather stressful. So, you know, I struggle with that. You know, I think the best way for me to do that is usually when I put some movies on or television shows and just sit back and watch those and put my phone away.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do, though, because it's like it's like you're getting news updates that, you know, all of the animals escaped from the zoo, and it's in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you want to know if the bears and the lions are in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly,
so you're reading things and okay, well, so what's the plan here? Who's mm-hmm. who's catching these animals? I mean, somebody's doing something about this, right? Someone?
that's exactly it. Things that can impact your next day.
Yeah.
You know, you can't totally shut it down. And so it's similar to hypochondriac and OCD natures where you need to stay informed, but you have to control it, how much you stay informed.
Yeah, because you can overstimulate. You can overstimulate yourself with information to the point where it's not doing you any good to know more than you know right now. In fact, mm-hmm. it can be detrimental to take in more than you have right now, because if you're not processing the information, you're just feeling it, then it's like you're filling yourself up with Mentos and Coke.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah, it's like cycling back and checking 10 minutes after you last checked the news, you know, is not necessarily a healthy thing to do, unless, you know, 10 minutes ago you saw they're about to make a big announcement, then you might have reason to check it again. But just kind of, you know, checking it constantly as an obsessive act, which I'm familiar with, can be a bad thing to do. But it's also easy to get down that, go down that rabbit hole of, you know, and knowing I shouldn't be checking this, but I got to check it. And I have that battle daily.
So how do you take yourself, how do you take yourself down when you find yourself in a state where, you know, something something needs to be counted or washed or scrubbed or you're panicking about something? How do you bring yourself back?
I think the kind of the best way, and it was a technique to an extent I learned in therapy, is to give into it for a certain amount of time, but know that, hey, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do this for the next 10 minutes, but then I'm going to step back and that's it. And now I'm just going to not do it anymore. So kind of to give into it for a certain amount of period. And I think that can be helpful. You know, I might just, all right, let me just check this for, you know I shouldn't be checking the news right now, but I'm going to go ahead and read it. Or I know my hands are washed, but I'm going to wash them one more time and then step back. It's kind of a get it out of your system.
Yeah.
So that I can then return to some sense of normalcy. Usually this, I think the big things that I struggle with is the anxiety that I get from, say, I have groceries delivered or some kind of food delivery made. Now, I want to go through and decontaminate everything that came through. And there's mixed, you know, professional advice on how necessary it is.
Yeah.
I always tend to err on the side of going over to make sure that I've accounted for all, I guess, opinions out there and what the reality is. If I get to the furthest extent of what is recommended and maybe just a little step further, I feel comfortable and content and that I did a good job with that. So when groceries come in, I'll go through and depending on if it's plastic, I'll spray it with a disinfectant and then I'll wash it off with soap and water. But the whole process can be so exhausting that, you know, the whole cross-contamination idea gets stuck in my head and I'll touch an object that I know is in the process and I'll have to wash my hands before I touch a clean product. Or let's say I want to transfer a loaf of bread from the plastic package into some kind of packaging or Tupperware that I have in the house. I end up trying to get the bread out with not having it touch the outer packaging and then having to wash my hands and then touch the Tupperware that the bread is now going to go in. The whole process back and forth between every single thing, every single grocery item that I bought can be super exhausting.
Yeah. And it's a strange balance to have to strike because we're kind of in a situation where you really can't be faulted for doing any of that. And in fact, there's some schools of thought that we should all be doing that. What kind of risks are you willing to take in a case like this? Let me ask you this: what's your immune system situation like? How strong is it typically?
I typically have a good strong immune system. I don't get sick easily.
You just worry about getting sick easily.
Exactly. You know, I'll get a cold once or twice a year.
Yeah.
The flu, it's been probably 5 years since I last had the flu. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was another at least 5 years, probably longer since I had the flu before that. So I tend not to get sick very frequent. However, with this new virus, it's so much more contagious. So,
well, it's not the flu.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, you know, I know I have not had it and my body would be susceptible to get it.
Yeah.
Because everybody seems to be easily able to get it. So
it's a difficult thing to put your trust in.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting a delivery of goods from the outside world. And there's this virus that, you know, they're giving us the data on how long it can stay on surfaces and how long it takes before you could present symptoms. The symptoms could be mild. Mm-hmm. You might not even see any. You don't know. You also don't know how it could affect your partner, even if you're fine. So it in some ways it makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, how do you manage this idea of being able to do what makes sense, which is clean everything that comes in, without worrying too much while you're doing it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what I'm doing, I'm still trying to figure that out. I think as it's caught everybody off guard, it's definitely caught me and my tendencies off guard, and I haven't figured out a good way to handle it all. I'm hoping, you know, when it first hit, I wasn't as concerned, because early word was, oh, this, most people, you know, unless they're older, won't even know they had it. Symptoms would be mild. Like, okay, well, then I'll get it probably at some point and it won't be that big of a deal. But then more evidence came out that younger people were having what I would call mild cases.
Sure.
And what they use the word mild isn't what I think most people considered mild symptoms.
Yeah.
It's mild compared to somebody that is on a ventilator.
Yes.
You know, so it's right. All relative. And so I started to realize, oh, when they say mild, does it mean what I thought mild meant?
Yeah. I mean, that's like someone saying minor limb loss.
Yes. You'll only lose a part of your arm. Oh,
right.
Okay. Yeah. And then I started to know people that had it.
Yeah.
And I, talking with them, what they're going through sounded frightening, terribly frightening. You know, people younger than me. And I'm like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to be in a situation where I have this. And so that started to get me much more concerned, much more vigilant in precautions. And I started reconsidering and I didn't have a laissez-faire attitude about it, but it started to make me realize the severity of what we're going through. So trying to manage the reality and also my symptoms of anxiety and rituals is something that is kind of a day-to-day process. Now, I think the best way that I've been able to do it is, you know, staying at home, not going out. The only times I do go out is going for running. And like you said, I hold my breath anytime I run by somebody. You know, if I turn down a corner and I see somebody down the road, I'll turn back around and go back down a different road.
Yeah.
You know, I go earlier in the morning so that there's less people out. You know, take certain precautions that way just to limit my exposure so I don't find myself in a situation where I'm going to be exposed or give me reason to give in to my tendencies. So I try to limit the exposure. Now, of course, that only works so far. You know, something like I went for a run yesterday and turned down. You know, I saw people up ahead, both sides of the road, and to the left, going down at the intersection. people on both sides of the road that way. So I turn to the right. And then, you know, five steps in, I see a group of people on bikes, like 15 bikes, all coming to get all down that way. And then people on either side of the road suddenly start appearing in the next intersection. I'm like, well, I'm screwed. there's nowhere for me to go right now that I can avoid people. So then I just, you know, hold my breath as much as possible, get through that. And like, well, there's nothing I can do now, you know.
Yeah.
Odds are still, you know, I was probably no more than 10 feet from somebody at the closest. So, you know, and it's outside, so I'm probably fine. But, you know, that's still kind of a anxiety-producing moment when you're, you know, going through that. And I don't know about you, when you're running and holding your breath, going by people, that can be exhausting to your run as well, because now you know, there's times where hold your breath. All right, I'm past that person far enough. And then all of a sudden somebody appears in front of you turning a corner. And then all of a sudden I don't have any ability to hold my breath now because I need oxygen. And so then you're kind of stuck breathing in within a few feet from somebody.
Right.
And that can be terrifying for me. And so, you know, again, though, limit that by just going out early enough in the morning for the most part and try to minimize that as much as possible. Groceries,
I think all of that is the way that you want to do it. It's the smartest way to manage, you know, a situation that's not necessarily going anywhere, but finding ways to still stay alive. But one of the things that I've been trying to work on myself is recognizing where I can take my helpful behaviors and apply them to other areas, with specifics in the area of management of fear. Because there are all of these things that I know I can do when I'm feeling fearful or worried. But fear is specifically the one, because I wanted to figure out what are my behaviors when I want to make myself feel more capable or more confident or more brave than I'm feeling right now. How do I activate that within myself? And I've been thinking about what those things are and trying to figure out how to apply them to the anxiety problems. What about you? What do you do? Do you have any ideas about the kinds of things that you do when you're trying to make yourself, say, feel more brave or more confident than you're feeling?
Well, oddly enough, I think what happens the most to get me a little more brave is being exhausted from having to go through and sterilize things. You know, if I've gone for a run, you know, and I know I've kind of, you know, put myself out there, and then I kind of spray the bottom of my soles of my shoes with antiseptic, whatever sanitizer I have available, and, you know, change out of my clothes, take a shower and whatnot. And then say groceries arrive. And then I go through the process of making sure they're all safe. Going through several things at once can be exhausting. And then I just realize I don't have the energy anymore to keep up this level of extreme caution. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to give into a few things now. And because I don't have the energy to do it.
All right. This is where we're drawing the line.
Exactly. It's just, I can't do this anymore.
You know, have and to exhaust think, yourself. And
yes. Just keep running in circles until you just can't do it anymore. It's like, you know, how to handle kids, you know, they get their energy levels down.
Hey, whatever works.
So, yeah. You know, and one thing I think, you know, now I'm the hypochondriac in my relationship. And so things that I want to do, and, you know, I go further extremes than my partner does. So therefore, I'm not comfortable unless I'm the one taking care of things. So making sure things are cleaned and sterilized, make sure the groceries are done. So I end up taking on more of the household chores, I guess, just out of, I would not be able to relax if I'm not able to actually supervise and see everything is done to the level that I will feel comfortable that things are safe. And which then adds to my exhaustion when I'm done.
I
don't know. I'm working through that. I'm hoping that, you know, on the small microcosm scale of just being physically exhausted after doing a bunch of things, like say one morning or one afternoon, taking to the larger scale of, all right, I've been doing this for several weeks. I can't keep up this level of being vigilant. Now is the time I need to like find things I can just let go. All right. Odds of getting this from, you know, they say paper products are only hold it at most 24 hours, but a lot of times it's down after minutes or even a few hours. So maybe I'm not going to be so careful about cardboard anymore. And finding things that I can let go of, like, okay, low risk with this, low risk with that. Those are things I'm going to start to kind of phase out, so to speak. That's kind of where I see it going as the pandemic continues. Finding things that I can just kind of relinquish and accept that I can't be hyper vigilant 24/7.
Has this had any kind of effect on the way that the dynamic exists in your relationship as far as being around each other kind of 24/7?
I think mostly, like most people that don't have the ability to like have their own time as much, probably similar to what most people are going through. I think probably a little bit more exaggerated just due to my own personal anxiety. I tend to need some me time anyway. Fortunately, we now live in a house as opposed to an apartment. That we lived in a 500 square foot apartment until 8 months ago. Oh. I could not imagine still being in that apartment. I feel very grateful. You know, it's a 3-bedroom house. So one room is our bedroom and one is my office and then one is his office. So that works out really well. And so we're able to have enough space and whatnot. So, however, I think it's probably more my personal anxiety, just I can't always be this kind of carefree person that I was before. And so maybe I need a little bit more me time. I need a little more quiet time so that I can process where things are at.
Like you've got to unpack these things before.
Yes.
Entering into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think we've have a strong relationship. So it's not having, I believe, any kind of profound impact on it. It's already strong. So, it can weather the storm. But it's always hard to, then I'll feel guilt like, oh, I want to give more of my carefree nature and freedom and, share more time, but at the same time, I don't have the strength always to do it at the level that I'd like to be able to do it. So it's a kind of a constant, give and take in my mind on that.
I think as long as the communication stays open about where you're at, especially in a situation where it really requires people to just, not walk on any eggshells and just come out and be honest. I need some time by myself right now. And I need you to understand that it can really expose different areas that might have needed some attention that didn't need attention before.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's something I've discovered in my relationship is we discovered some areas that were just like, here's some stuff. that we never really found ourselves in a situation where we had to address it.
Yeah.
But now here we are kind of living on top of each other. And how do we handle this situation? And it does, once the communication comes into play and it's and you make sure that it's solid, I think everything starts to smooth out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it should always be like that.
The relationship handbook didn't come with a chapter on global pandemics. So it's new territory for everybody, and, you know, having to, you know, as long as communication is made and people talk their way through it, you know, it's, you know, we all can get through it.
That's kind of why I'm finding that I feel a little more patient with people that I disagree with on how they're handling things. I'm a little more patient with just about everybody because I recognized that now is a time where I really can't afford to waste energy on frivolous anger. You know what I mean? Like it just makes more sense to say, you know what? None of us really know what's going on. And some people could be handling it better than others, but let me check my empathy just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit and say, you know what? We're all going through this for the first time and we may never see anything like this in our lifetime. We might not. Hopefully we don't. But here we are in this unprecedented situation. You know, fucking Disneyland's closed, for Christ's sakes. It's, you know, they wouldn't shut down everything in the world if this wasn't something serious. And I understand how frustrated everyone is. And I get it. And I feel for you, whatever your situation is. And we're all trying to understand how to balance our being upset about missing birthday parties and weddings and movies and dinners and hugging our family and seeing our kids and people who are living in different states that you can't get to and loved ones dying. There's a lot of things that we're all kind of trying to deal with and trying to put all of these quantifiers on who deserves to feel angry or sad or anything. Too much energy right now.
Well, and that's how I take approach like that as well, where, you know, I tend to have a lot of sympathy towards people of differing viewpoints and whatnot, or just people I run into, and maybe they give me an attitude for this reason or that reason. I don't know what happened to their day beforehand. I don't know what they're going through at the moment. So I don't tend to jump to a conclusion of that person is an asshole. You know, they might be having a bad day, you know? Yeah. So I tend not to try to judge in the best of times. And I think in a time like now, even more so, because we don't know what, you know, some of the people that, as misguided as I feel that they are, going out to protest and standing on the Capitol steps and, you know, being in a big crowd, that person, you know, probably watches a different kind of news than I do and gets information filtered a different way. They may be out of work. They may be struggling to make their next payment and their kids are driving them crazy in the house and they don't know if they're going to be able to pay for meals next month because we don't really know what the government's going to be doing for families in this situation yet, and unemployment's not coming through as fast as people want it. So there's a lot of things that could be going on in that person's life. So I don't want to jump to specific conclusions about any specific person. As a group, I think, all right, they really need to stop. But
someone needs to help them with their problem. Because they wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
So whether the problem is not getting the right information or not being cared for or, you know, a general lack of support or fear or having some very valid concerns addressed. It's a completely understandable situation. Things are wrong. I don't necessarily know what I need right now, but I need things to go back to the way they were before all of this started. And so that's what I'm going to fight for because I don't know what else to do.
That's kind of a comfort for some people where to return back to normalcy means that their anxiety will, you know, diminish.
But after a certain point, it's almost like, can we all just pretend this isn't happening anymore? Because this is too scary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but of course, and the flip side of that, though, is if you give into all that stuff too much, too soon, then you're making it yourself, you're kind of kicking the can down the road, and it's going to be worse because now you're going to be exposed. You know, you're exposing yourself more and exposing other people more. So, you know, the logic, I guess, the overall logic behind it doesn't support that, but human nature of wanting that return to normalcy is totally understandable. We all want it.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say we all would like to go back to that.
Tell me something that you are grateful for in this situation.
Well, again, I think I'm most grateful for security of both, you know, me and my partner's work. We both have jobs. He just got a job, new job, just before this all went down. He had 1 week on location on the job before it all changed. And I've been fortunate to be migrating even further into work that I had prior to all this. So I feel very grateful that financially that we're secure and that we live in a house, that we have got enough space to have our own areas and that we can work and not be on top of each other. So we have got the financial security. There's a weird flip side to all that, though, because then I feel guilty for expecting everybody to maintain that if they can. You know, people that aren't financially doing well in all this. And then I'm expecting them to weather the storm as well, even though I'm kind of sitting in a much better situation than they are. Logically, I know that we all have to weather the storm. Otherwise, it will be much worse for those people and possibly for me if we don't adhere to certain limitations. But that doesn't stop the guilt from knowing I'm in a better situation than many others are. I know many people, you know, personally that are unemployed because of this, and you know they're struggling trying to get unemployment. You know, various states. I moved out here to Oregon from Florida, and of course, Florida is making lots of headlines for having a horrible unemployment situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, even out here in Oregon, there's a lot of frustrations with it. So just the system isn't anywhere really isn't built to handle this extreme situation. So it's, you know, it's a hard thing to see a lot of people I care about having to deal with. But those are the things that I do feel fortunate. And, of course, I do feel fortunate to be in a situation of being okay being by myself, or you know, limited social interaction. And in a weird, strange way, I think I feel lucky that I have a bit of a hypochondriac and OCD problem, because it kind of I'm already used to a certain thought process, and so it can kind of lend itself well in a way.
You're prepared.
If managed. Yeah. You know, it's like, I know how to do this. The negative side is I've spent years trying to deprogram myself from doing this. Now I've got to let go and let some of that deprogramming revert back to its natural state.
Who would have thought that the apocalypse would come and we wouldn't need Mad Max, but we would need Jason Morissette to wash off all of his fruits and vegetables. And
yes,
yeah.
Obsessive compulsive order is a superpower in our our present world.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing what you can to manage it, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about this today.
Well, thanks for having me on, and you know, touching base again, because it's been almost its own therapy of getting out my feelings and how I'm handling it. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve as this pandemic continues to run its course. So it'll be an interesting time for sure.
Yeah.
And thank you, Chris, for I mean, I can't think of a better time to have a program like yours out there when people are running, you know, through all their individual anxieties and struggles. I mean, this situation just exacerbates everything for across the board of, you know, all kinds of people's emotional and mental problems. And how do you deal with it in an extreme like this? So I think, you know, I think a lot of people are getting solace from listening to others vent their situation out there. And so I think it's a great thing.
Well, thank you. All right, everybody, that is Jason Morissette, number two, in the can. What can? What am I even talking about? I've been trying to record this outro like 10 times now, and we're just going to leave it. You know why? I don't think I have any gas left in the tank, to be honest with you. So before I say something even dumber, let me direct you to something that's not dumb. JasonJMorissette.com. You want to get some more Jason in your life, and I know that you do. Get yourself over to JasonJMorissette.com. You can find links to his production company, Ravencraft Productions. There's demo reels. There's film clips. And you can always find the great little zombie movie that could, locked away, still streaming on Amazon. But until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.